An Essay Upon the Development of Christian Doctrine by John Henry Newman. Chapter 4. Instances in Illustration. It follows now to inquire how much evidence is actually producible for those large portions of the present creed of Christendom which have not a recognized place in the primordial idea and the historical outline of the religion, yet which come to us with certain antecedent considerations strong enough in reason to raise the effectiveness of that evidence to a point disproportionate, as I have allowed, to its intrinsic value. In urging these considerations here, of course I exclude for the time the force of the Church's claim of infallibility in her acts, for which so much can be said. But I do not exclude the logical cogency of those acts, considered as testimonies to the faith of the times before them. My argument, then, is this, that from the first age of Christianity, its teaching looked towards those ecclesiastical dogmas afterwards recognized and defined, with, as time went on, more or less determinate advance in the direction of them, till at length that advance became so pronounced as to justify their definition and to bring it about, and to place them in the position of rightful interpretations and keys of the remains and the records in history of the teaching which had so terminated. This line of argument is not unlike that which is considered to constitute a sufficient proof of truths in physical science. An instance of this is furnished us in a work on mechanics of the past generation by a writer of name, and his explanation of it will serve as an introduction to our immediate subject. After treating of the laws of motion, he goes on to observe, "These laws are the simplest principles to which motion can be reduced, and upon them the whole theory depends. They are not, indeed, self-evident, nor do they admit of accurate proof by experiment, on account of the great nicety required in adjusting the instruments and making the experiments, and on account of the effects of friction and the air's resistance, which cannot entirely be removed. They are, however, constantly and invariably suggested to our senses, and they agree with experiment as far as experiment can go. And the more accurately the experiments are made, and the greater care we take to remove all those impediments which tend to render the conclusions erroneous, the more nearly do the experiments coincide with these laws. And thus, a converging evidence in favor of certain doctrines may, under circumstances, be as clear a proof of their apostolical origin as can be reached, practically, from the quod semper, quod ubique, quod ab omnibus. In such a method of proof, there is, first, an imperfect, secondly, a growing evidence, thirdly, in consequence, a delayed inference and judgment, fourthly, reasons producible to account for the delay. Section 1. Instances cursorily noticed. 1. Canon of the New Testament. As regards the New Testament, Catholics and Protestants receive the same books as canonical and inspired. Yet among those books, some are to be found which certainly have no right there, if, following the rule of Vincentius, we receive nothing as of divine authority, except that which has been received always and everywhere. The degrees of evidence are very various for one book and another. It is confessed, says Less, that not all the scriptures of our New Testament have been received with universal consent as genuine works of the evangelists and apostles. But that man must have predetermined to oppose the most palpable truths, and must reject all history, who will not confess that the greater part of the New Testament has been universally received as authentic, and that the remaining books have been acknowledged as such by the majority of the ancients. For instance, as to the Epistle of St. James. It is true it is contained in the old Syriac version in the 2nd century. But Origen, in the 3rd century, is the first writer who distinctly mentions it among the Greeks, and it is not quoted by name by any Latin till the 4th. St. Jerome speaks of its gaining credit by degrees in process of time. Eusebius says no more than that it had been, up to his time, acknowledged by the majority, and he classes it with the Shepherd of St. Hermas and the Epistle of St. Barnabas. Again, the Epistle to the Hebrews, though received in the East, was not received in the Latin churches till St. Jerome's time. St. Irenaeus either does not affirm or denies that it is St. Paul's. Tertullian ascribes it to St. Barnabas. Caius excludes it from his list. St. Hippolytus does not receive it. St. Cyprian is silent about it. It is doubtful whether St. Optatus received it. Again, St. Jerome tells us that in his day, toward A.D. 400, the Greek Church rejected the Apocalypse, but the Latin received it. Again, the New Testament consists of 27 books in all, though of varying importance. Of these, 14 are not mentioned at all till from 80 to 100 years after St. John's death, in which number are the Acts, the 2nd to the Corinthians, the Galatians, the Colossians, the 2 to the Thessalonians, and St. James. Of the other 13, 5, viz. St. John's Gospel, the Philippians, the 1st to Timothy, the Hebrews, and the 1st of St. John, are quoted by but one writer during the same period. On what ground, then, do we receive the canon as it comes to us, but on the authority of the Church of the 4th and 5th centuries? The Church at that era decided, not merely bore testimony, but passed a judgment on former testimony, decided that certain books were of authority. And on what ground did she so decide? On the ground that hitherto a decision had been impossible in an age of persecution, from want of opportunities for research, discussion, and testimony, from the private or the local character of some of the books, and from misapprehension of the doctrine contained in others. Now, however, facilities were at length given for deciding once for all on what had been in suspense and doubt for 3 centuries. On this subject I will quote another passage from the same tract. We depend upon the 4th and 5th centuries thus. As to Scripture, former centuries do not speak distinctly, frequently, or unanimously, except of some chief books, as the Gospels. But we see in them, as we believe, an ever-growing tendency and approximation to that full agreement which we find in the 5th. The testimony given at the latter date is the limit to which all that has been before said converges. For instance, it is commonly said, exceptio probat regulam, when we have reason to think that a writer or an age would have witnessed so-and-so, but for this or that, and that this or that were mere accidents of his position, then he or it may be said to tend toward such testimony. In this way, the first centuries tend toward the fifth. Viewing the matter as one of moral evidence, we seem to see in the testimony of the fifth the very testimony which every preceding century gave, accidents excepted, such as the present loss of documents once extant, or the then existing misconceptions which want of intercourse between the churches occasioned. The fifth century acts as a comment on the obscure text of the centuries before it, and brings out a meaning which, with the help of the comment, any candid person sees really to be theirs. End of Part 1 of Chapter 4.